wonderful to be with you all again. I make my way here once or twice a year as Pastor John is traveling or getting some vacation time away. My name is Jeff Doringer, and for those of you I've seen before, it's great to see you again. If I haven't seen you before, it's great to meet you, and I'll be around after the service. If anybody wants prayer or just to say hello or talk a little bit, I'm happy to be around and just minister even after the service. For those who don't know me or don't remember, I'm ordained through the Christian and Missionary Alliance. It's an evangelical denomination and kind of centered in the deeper work of God and His Spirit and mission. So I work in our district office that oversees about 85 churches, and I do this kind of thing with different churches in our association, in our denomination. So, and sometimes I get to travel outside of that and be with other congregations who love God and are pursuing Him and seeking just a fresh revelation of who He is so that they can continue to serve and reach out in your community just like you all are doing. So that's me. That's what I do. I have four kids. My oldest is will be a junior at Capital University, and my youngest is 13. So that's kind of our age bracket. And we've been able to do some fun things this summer. Hopefully you got to do some things as well. We've had a great summer so far, and looking forward to whatever is left of it for all of us. As we begin this morning, though, we're going to be talking about the faith formation process, the process of faith formation. And, you know, even all the, I don't know what God brought up in your heart as we just sat before Him for those moments, but He takes the things that are in our life and He uses them, right? Those are the things He uses to shape how we know Him. And that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about today, is the process of faith formation. How is our faith formed? How does it grow? How does it expand? And we're going to be looking at that in particular through the life of Peter in the last chapter of the Gospel of John. So sometimes we can, when we read the Bible or we read different stories, they're sort of, we kind of view them as like these stories that are maybe positioned in such a way that, like, oh, it's maybe outside of real life, I guess. We don't think of it sometimes as like, wait, there's a story going on here. You know, these are real people in a process of faith formation, right? Weren't the disciples in a process of their faith being formed and how they understood who Jesus was and all the different things that happened in their journey? Those were forming how they understood and knew who God was, how they understood and knew who Jesus was. That's the faith formation process. And my hope is that even in the things that came up in your heart this morning, those aren't outside of the faith formation process. In fact, those are probably the central things in your faith formation process. God's going to reveal and do some things in you through those very things that are most on your hearts today. That's where He likes to show up. And so my hope is that as we kind of walk through this morning, there's things in your kind of everyday life that you can begin maybe in a greater way to see, ah, I think God is seeking to form something through this in this area of my life. You know, as I come to thinking about the process of faith formation, I come to it in a particular way, and I thought it was only fair that I might lay a couple of those things out. So here's how I come to the faith formation process. God is a spirit being, and He created the physical world and everything in it as an expression of who He is, right? He's created everything as an expression of who He is, and He sets up the parameters. Right? He sets up the parameters of how it flows and how things function. Right? He set up the parameters of how this world functions. You know, all the way to the laws of nature, right? Those are a part of how He set it up. Relationships function as a part of how God set things up. And God set up human existence. He's designed it in such a way that living our lives is meant to draw us into a deeper experience of Him. And that the things that God made are His way of helping us to discover Him. So the actual process of living life is designed, the very process of it is designed to help reveal things about God and to help our formation of faith, how we understand and know Him. And so life itself, life inherently, guess what? Is a faith formation process. Right? So that's kind of how I come at this idea of our faith formation is God's made the whole system. We live within the system. And He's actually made the system so that as we grow from, you know, childhood all the way through, like, He's using that as a way of opening up Himself to us and us to Himself. Right? That's the faith formation process, and it's embedded in how He's made the world and how He's made us as people. That makes me feel a whole lot better because sometimes, I don't know, I just think of it, it's artificial, and I'm imposing this faith stuff onto my life rather than thinking, no, my life is the faith formation process, and by living life, it's actually designed to help me know Him and to be formed and shaped by Him. And that's how I come to this idea of faith formation. If you have a Bible and you want to turn there, we're going to be in the Gospel of John in chapter 21. Before we get into the text, I'll give you a few moments to turn there if you want to. But a couple of things about the Gospel of John. The Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they talk a lot about what Jesus did and what He said. John's Gospel is a shift. It's a little bit different. John kind of goes after who Jesus is. So the Synoptic Gospels talk and if you will, report what Jesus did and said. John is positioning things in such a way that help us see who he is. John, as a disciple, grew and drew closer to Jesus than any of the other disciples. He was the disciple whom what? Jesus loved, right? He was the disciple whom Jesus loved. He was given deeper insight into the nature of who Jesus is, even beyond the others. And you can see it in the way that he wrote, his gospel. Matthew, for example, we get a window through John into the mystery of Jesus' nature. If you think about Matthew shows Jesus' ancestry going back to Abraham. Mark takes it further back to Adam. Luke shows Jesus' Davidic ancestry through Joseph. And if you will, the origin, the birth story, if you will, that John includes is what? In the beginning was the Word. And so he, right from the outset, John is drawing us into who is this person? Who is this person? And from the beginning, we see Jesus as the always existent one. He kind of skips the human birth narratives and goes right after the divinity and the reality of the nature of who Jesus is. John paid attention and saw connections that the other disciples didn't. Remember when they were rushing to the tomb, Peter and John, right? And who won the race? Who won the race to the tomb? John won. He won the race to the tomb. But who goes into the tomb first? Peter. So John, he's booking it. He gets there to the tomb. And what does John do? This is so, it exemplifies who John is. He stops there. And when Peter gets there, he charges on in. He's in there. In that text where John stopped, like, why does John stop there? He's pausing there to take it in, right? He's getting the lay of the land. He's pondering. He's allowing this, what is happening, to settle in. different than Peter, who charges on in. By the time John actually goes in and he spends a little time inside the empty tomb, the text actually says that's the point at which John believed. And he didn't, and at that point, he had not seen Jesus raised from the dead yet. How does John get to that point where Peter is still picking up clothes, you know? And like, because he was pondering and he was paying attention in a way to see what does all of this mean? That's John. He paid attention in a way and consequently kind of received revelation and understanding. John, as a gospel writer, he connects the I Am of the Old Testament and reveals 9 I Ams throughout the Gospel of John about Jesus as the I Am. And so, right, and all those I Am statements reveal who? They reveal a person, a facet of a person. And again, where the Synoptic Gospels, you know, they have parables and all that, John doesn't have those kinds of things in his Gospel. He's trying to help you see who this person is, painting a picture, getting a portrait to draw each person in, right? And he does it in these kind of like, I am the bread of life, right? Where it's like, I kind of get the idea and I kind of don't, and I need to think about it, and it draws me in. That's John's way of helping us enter in, even into the faith formation process, because we got to grapple with those I Ams as they reveal things about Jesus. John, as different than the other gospel writers, he records intimate conversations with individuals. And I might add, as we're talking about it, faith formation, aren't these individuals that he talked to, Nicodemus, the Samaritan woman, Martha, Mary, Magdalene, and then Peter, which we'll look at here in a moment in John chapter 21. There's these lengthier conversations that get recorded, right? Aren't those people on a faith formation journey? And John captures these little vignettes, and those little vignettes take Nicodemus, right? Nicodemus is trying to grapple with things he's hearing about Jesus, and then things he's probably seeing himself and different reports about Jesus. He's in a faith formation process, and we have, you know, a conversation, and John records more of that in-depth conversation. I think helping us even realize, wait, there's a process involved to us growing and coming to understand God as he lives within maybe our own experience. Because sometimes I think we superimpose, like, oh, we have to trust God, and it's like this line in the sand. We either we do or we don't. Well, then when you read these, you know, the way in which John positions the faith formation process, you're like, oh, there's a process here. I need to come to this place of understanding or trust or belief. And there's a bit of a journey, right? That's true in our own lives. You don't just, whatever came to your heart earlier, we don't often just, I trust God, that's it. Right? There's a movement of things that he does within us that help us move in that direction. And there's a point at which we're like, yeah, I'm at peace with God over this. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to unfold and all that, but he's worked us and moved within us in that formation of faith in our journey and in our lives. John is sort of the king of metaphors, not just with the I Ams, but he also uses different ways of helping us to understand Jesus as the bridegroom, the bread of life, the living water, the light of the world. All these ways that we can kind of come to know him. And John loves to let us kind of hang out there with the mystery of who he is and let it filter in and work its way into our lives. So that's John. That's the Gospel of John. And we're going to pick up at the very end of the Gospel in John chapter 21. And so I'm going to read this to you, and then we're just going to pick out a few things in this faith formation process. Afterwards, Jesus appeared again to the disciples by the Sea of Galilee. And it happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. So John positioned seven of them there at this appearance of Jesus. And Peter says, and again, be thinking about formation, Peter's faith formation process. Peter's like, I'm going out to fish. Simon Peter told them, and they said, well, we'll go with you. So they went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and then he jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw fire burning coals. There was fish on it and some bread. And Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you have caught. So Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and dragged the net ashore. It was full of fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. None of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Again, be thinking formation. Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, Lord, who is going to betray you? When Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? And Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. What do we notice about Peter in chapter 21 here? So there were already two appearances of Jesus to the disciples. So Peter had seen Jesus alive. He had revealed himself alive to Peter. And it's interesting because the previous verses, right at the end of John chapter 20, those verses sort of feel like the conclusion of the Gospel of John.
Because it says, Jesus performed many signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in these books. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you might have life in his name. That sounds like a great ending, doesn't it? But then you have this other chapter, this, you know, most of your Bibles probably call it, you know, an epilogue. But John is like, well, it's not just enough to believe, you know. In this last part, he's reinstating him to ministry. God in our formation wants us serving other people. And so it becomes a bit of that, this chapter. But how does he move from where Peter's at? I mean, imagine Peter's, the crumbled nature of how Peter's feeling right now. Right? He knows he denied him, and then Jesus appears, so now he knows he's alive from the dead, and the disciples, at least these seven, are together. And what does Peter do? He's like, I'm gonna go fishing. So he already knows he's back alive, and he wants to go fishing. He wants to go back to what was familiar to him. What do we know about Peter? Like, what does he do? He is like, I mean, impetuous Peter, we could probably call him, right? He charges in. He charged into the tomb. He's the one who slashed the ear off of the soldier when they came to get Jesus. Like, he's always throwing himself out there and doing before, we'd say before thinking, perhaps. So what is he doing here? He's like, can't sit still in a lot of ways. He's got to go, and he's like, let's go fishing. And all the others, like sheep, right, follow Peter out to go fishing. Well, when they're out there fishing, what happens? They fish all night. Now, they've experienced this before, haven't they? You might think, they'd catch on a little bit, but we don't judge them for not catching on. They need to go through the faith just like we do. I'm going fishing. So they go out and fish, and they haven't caught anything. And then Jesus, though they don't recognize him, he calls out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? And that word friends, that's actually more like children or little children. Probably not something you say to your buddies, you know, or to like rough and tough fishermen who are used to working all night. Like, that's not the normal way you would. So like, there's already something positioned differently about how Jesus kind of shouts out over the water, and you're like, well, they're about 100 yards out. How do you hear? Well, thankfully on water, right? Sound rolls a little farther, and so they can hear him. Friends, and he asks in the negative, what'd you catch? Haven't you any fish? Meaning, I know there's nothing in your boat. They don't have any fish. And they'd answer. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. Now, I don't know if you've ever been fishing. I've been fishing. It's like, you know, if we're not catching anything, like, oh man, you know what? There's a giant log over there. Maybe the bass are like, maybe there's a little bit of a deeper pocket under there, and they can hide in the shadows and maybe a little cooler water, and like, let's go, you know, hey, try this spot. That's not how Jesus comes at this one. He comes at this one where he gives, like, it's a command. Throw your nets on the other side, which is totally a joke. We're talking whatever, however wide the boat was, it's like, probably not going to make any difference in terms of location in that sense. Throw your net out on the right side of the boat and you will find some. And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of a large number of fish. Now, John is a genius author. He's a genius author. If we flip back just a couple of chapters, and I'll read to you John chapter 15, verse 5. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit.
Apart from me, you can do nothing. How much did they catch when they went and did it themselves? Nothing. And you see the faith formation process. Let's go fishing. I know what to do. I know how we should do this, right? And he does this on his own. And the result is what? Nothing. And in this formational process that Peter's walking through, then when they what? Follow, when they remain in him, when they abide in him, when they listen to the instruction, then they catch a net so full. Now, what is Jesus wanting the disciples to be? Fishers of men. Again, this is symbolic. John is a wonderfully symbolic writer, and he says, when you abide in me, there will be a harvest of people who will come to know me. And the net that was so full of fish, the net didn't rip, because the kingdom of God can hold all kinds of people with all kinds of pasts and all kinds of problems and all kinds of whatever. And God can move them in the faith formation process to reveal who he is to them. It's, of course, interesting that John, the moment that happens, he turns to Peter and he says, it's the Lord. Peter didn't catch it. John caught it. And then what does Peter do? Still impetuous, still learning the lesson of abide in me, rather than stay in the boat and bring the fish in with the others, he puts on his cloak, he jumps in the water, and swims ashore. And John is particular he says he wrapped his outer garment around him, and then he jumped into the water. That word wrapped is the same when Jesus, a few verses down, and he says, very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself. He's referencing back to even what just happened. He's connecting these things. It's the same term that's used in both, as Peter dressed himself and again went where he wanted to go. And there's a shift that's he's positioning, I think, a bit in the faith formation process. For Peter is used to moving straight in and making decisions and doing it his way. And a huge part of this journey is us receiving what the Lord is doing and shifting that gear somewhat from, I've got to make these decisions, I've got to make this happen, I've got to fix this, all the I've got to pieces of it, and he's shifting it to let me do it and you receive what I'm doing. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Now, of course, John is a symbolic writer. There's both a literal and a figurative. He was telling Peter the kind of death that he was going to die. But in the formational process of Peter's life, the process that's going to shift for him is, Christians would call it, there's active spirituality and passive spirituality. Peter is on the active side. Kind of take the bull by the horns, and there's things along that line that he's very active in trying to grow his relationship with Jesus, right? And you see this shift happen with Peter. You're going to dress yourself and go where you want to go, but there it's going to shift to receiving. You're going to be led where you don't want to go. That's a pretty hard shift, isn't it? in our formational process, right? There's quite a journey for us where we have to come to this place where we, you know, in a phrase, let go and let God, right? We've kind of heard that, where we, what's God up to in this particular thing? And we become more responsive to what God is doing than taking the initiative on something to fix it or to try to do something about it. And that's a very significant shift in our faith formation process. And we see it sort of embedded here in this story. John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila brought these terms into Christian usage, active and passive spirituality. In active spirituality, and there's a slide to go along with it, when we're in the active side of spirituality, it feels like it's our responsibility. Can we see Peter with that story, right? He feels like it's his responsibility. In the active part of our spiritual journey, there's a lot of self-effort. Can we see that in Peter, right? It's his effort. It's him propelling himself forward. He has to take the initiative, right? And we see him continuing to do that. In this active part of our spiritual journeys, we feel like we're in charge and everything hinges on our obedience. Everything, right? Everything hinged on our obedience. It's interesting because Peter honestly, he probably felt like he was out because he had disobeyed. That's not a showstopper in the economy of what Jesus was doing in the formation. But that's how Peter felt, because in active spirituality, we feel like it all hinges on our obedience. In active spirituality, it's often goal-based and results-oriented. In active spirituality, the spiritual journey feels very linear. We get to here, and then we get to here, and then we get to here, and then we get to here, and it's this progressive, generally, upward sort of thing to where we're pretty good. You know what I mean? We've got everything under control. At least it feels that way. In active spirituality, if we're not choosing all of our spiritual disciplines and stuff and sort of keeping up with our end of the bargain, if you will, it feels like we're slipping and sliding and going backwards, okay? That's active spirituality. Passive spirituality is the aspect of our followership where we recognize God is the one making something happen. He's the one at work through something that's going on in our life, and he's the one who's bringing something about in us. It's something we come to see that is happening to us, and it's something that's underway within us. And when we start to make that shift, our spiritual journey sometimes flows a little bit easier. Because let's face it, most of us feel like it all depends on us, don't we? It all depends on us. But he who began a good work in you will finish it when it's over? Mm-mm. He who began a good work in you will carry it on, Jeff's words, through the faith formation process all throughout your life. He's the one who's at work in you to will and to do for his good pleasure. So our spiritual journey, it starts out like a Peter, right? And even John, we can't underestimate the fact that John was a son of thunder, and he was in, right? He learned a different way. He learned it at a different pace than Peter. But don't we all have this space in our lives where we do feel like it's up to us? We are in that active spirituality place and all. And that's actually okay for a period of time in our journey. But as we are formed, it has to switch. And we realize, oh, God's up to something. And then, but in that passive place, it's a lot harder, right? That shift Peter's going through is not simple. it often, this shift comes about when things are out of our control and against our will. You'll be led where you do not want to go. There's a bunch of things that you have to face that are probably not necessarily even the result of your direct decisions, but life around you and or other people's decisions. And yet, you have to deal with them. You are led where you may not want to go, to deal with things you may not want to deal with. I think of Simon of Cyrene, who was given the cross of Jesus to carry. The guy was coming in, most likely from some time out in the wilderness somewhere, and he happens upon the incident where Jesus is carrying his cross. I mean, how many streets are there, right? Like, go a different way. He picked the short straw or something on this. But he comes upon this, you know, where Jesus is, you know, going to get crucified, and they end up throwing him into the mix. He didn't want to carry that cross. This was not in the cards. Some of the things that we have in our journeys, they're there, and they're things we don't want to choose, but they're there. And so God often is the one moving us to places where we are out of control and we don't really want to be there. In passive spirituality, there's suffering and our limitations. The hardest part is it doesn't follow predictable patterns. Right? It doesn't follow the predictable patterns. Oh, I'm doing well in active spirituality. I'm having time with God. I'm doing the things I need to be doing. But like, wait, I'm still making bad decisions. This isn't fit. This doesn't fit. This doesn't fit. In passive spirituality, the line isn't linear anymore. And things like, oh, I thought I took care of that years ago. It's like, why is this here again? Why am I battling this? It stops making sense, and it's no longer linear in this passive spirituality place. Because what is the journey of this movement, this shift? For Peter to go from, I'm going to go fishing, right? And then he jumps in the water when he finds out it's Jesus. Oh, he's got to make the shift to trust. Do you trust that your entire life is held by God? That, remember how I started out? You living your life is the formational journey for you to discover and come to the end of yourself, abide in me, right? I'm the vine, to come to that place. He's not asking you to be something you aren't yet. And in fact, he's the one who's going to do that in you. That's the process of trust, where we recognize, yeah, there's this thing that needs attention, and he's going to do something with it. And I'm going to try, instead of all my effort and energy and strength going into how I fix it, I'm going to put it into paying attention, like John, right? I don't run right into the tomb. I don't jump into the water like Peter did. How is God working on this? How is he asking me to cooperate with how I sense him moving in my life right now? That's the shift from active spirituality to passive spirituality. And I find in the formational path of our lives, it's a big transition spot. One author calls it kind of first half of life stuff and second half of life stuff. In the first half of life stuff, we're busy building. And in the second half of life stuff, a lot of times what we built somewhat gets disassembled. It shifts. It changes. 1 + 1 doesn't always equal 2 in the second half of life. And it's in that place, though, that we come to a greater appreciation of love, of mystery, of goodness, that we don't deserve and we know it, right? Because if you're doing everything you should do and good things happen, guess what? You think you earned it. But in the second half, When you just come upon things and you know, well, there's some great things here. And it's not because I've been a great person or I've done everything I thought I should do. You melt into the mystery of God, the love of God, the goodness of God, all the grace. And it's like it just becomes a something that is. And we're suspended in it and held in it. And that's the place. That's faith formation. That's where I want to be. The active spirituality side, it has its place for a time, but we get pretty tuckered out there and exhausted there. And the place of true rest is as we transition from that into a passive spirituality place where we just begin to be confident that He's at work doing something. I'll close with this. I remember the Lord giving me this image as I remember myself kind of more experiencing this reality. This wasn't taught to me, and then it happened to me. It happened to me, then I had to figure out what the heck's going on in my journey with God. So I've had to dig around to find ways of other saints who experience the same thing, who could give me words to understand what was happening. And God gave me an image of a yo-yo. Well, a yo-yo is, you know, you've got the ball, you know, I'm the yo-yo, I'm the hunk of plastic, and it's tethered to a string, but when it's all bundled up and God drops it, you feel like you're free fall until you get to the bottom of however long the string is, and then it starts binding itself back up all the way to the top again. And until I experienced that, where I the bottom hit the rope, the string, and it started curling back up. And I'm like, that's what it feels like to be held by God. And usually the free fall is the spaces we feel most broken or least in control. Those are our sin patterns, our habits we can't get over, the situation I can't just go fix with my family, etc. But when it hits the bottom and starts rolling back up, and we know we're just held by God, He's got this, then we can kind of maybe relax a little and just cooperate with the process and let Him do what He wants to do in our lives. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Peter's even symbolic of all people, of all the disciples, of all of us. Because for this process to happen, God has to lead us into places we don't want to go, to do something there. Jesus Himself went where He didn't want to go, didn't He? When Jesus said, "Follow me," he was actually like saying, "Those who are following me are going to mirror my own journey." He was in Gethsemane crying out to His Father. He was led where He didn't want to go. His arms were outstretched. And we too, through the process of our lives, end up in places where that's the same thing. But it's there in death, there in when we're out of control and all we have is God to rescue us, that we find the mercy flows, the grace flows, the love flows, and we are held. I want to give you just a couple of moments with the Lord. Where's your faith formation at? Where's your faith process at? And maybe even in light of the active versus passive spirituality terms, think of the things that surfaced in your heart earlier. Are you in an active space with them? And if so, maybe there's a shift that is underway. just abide in him. Is there an area where you're sort of saying, let's go fishing? And you fish all night. You still don't get anywhere. Hear Jesus say to you, friend, little children, cast your net on the other side. Continue to meet with the Lord. The worship team's going to make their way back up to the front. As we sing this closing song together, I wonder if you might sing it in a place of just being held in the mystery of love that isn't earned, grace that's ever flowing. Just suspended and held by a God who knows that you can be confident. Because he who began a good work in you is at work right now, carrying it on to its completion all the way until the day of Christ Jesus. So stand. Let's sing this song in that place of being held and suspended in the love of God.